Welcome to BioRossi's Few and Far Between, conversations on the cutting edge of clinical research. I'm your host, Chris O'Brien. On today's podcast, we are very fortunate to have with us Karen Petru and David Brent. Our topic focuses on biobonds, an innovative financial vehicle designed to advance treatments for rare diseases and other disorders through clinical research. Karen Petru, the leader of this initiative, is the co-founder and managing partner for Federal Financial Analytics, Inc., which provides advisory services for legislative, regulatory, and public policy issues affecting financial services companies that do business in the U.S. and abroad. She's also the author of Engine of Inequality, The Fed and the Future of Wealth in America. Additionally, Karen sits on the board of directors for the Foundation Fighting Blindness and the Fidelico Guide Dog Foundation. It is her journey as a visionary in patient advocacy and financial innovation that has led to the formation of the Biobond Initiative. Karen is joined by David Brent, the distinguished chairman of the board of directors for the Foundation Fighting Blindness, advocating research into prevention and treatment for the entire spectrum of retinal degenerative diseases. Together, they have helped to bring support and resources to patients in need and expanded their strategies into driving capital to critical clinical studies. We hope you join us for this fascinating discussion into the importance of translational biomedical research for venture capital companies, the creation of biobonds, and the need for continuing clinical research. This was really a fun one. I hope you enjoy this episode. Hello and welcome to Few and Far Between. Today, I'm really excited for a chat with Karen Petru and David Brent. We're going to be talking about biobonds, an exciting way to think about financing drug development as we go forward. And we're going to talk a little bit about the Foundation for Fighting Blindness. But first, let me welcome Karen and David. Karen, great to be speaking with you.
Thanks very much. It's a great pleasure.
And David, welcome.
Thank you very much. My pleasure to be here too.
Karen, let's start a little bit with you. You have a fascinating backstory. I found you through an article in the New York Times. Will you tell us a little bit about your personal journey and what brought you to focus on these alternative ways of developing financing solutions?
Sure. And I will be brief because it's been a long journey. But my professional background with my late husband had run a company which engages in global financial analytics and consulting for some of the world's central banks, biggest financial institutions. And so we think a lot about financial instruments and how financial markets work. And that's my day job. But in my real life, I had been losing my sight to a form of retinitis pigmentosa and therefore very much involved over many years with the Foundation Fighting Blindness, which David is now the distinguished chairman. Many years, several years ago now, I was at an FFB board meeting and we were talking about this question of all of the great research that was coming on stream, which was really showing terrific promise for treating and even restoring vision for patients with inherited retinal diseases such as mine. But the venture capital wasn't there because, as one of the VCs at the meeting said, it just their business model did not support translational biomedical research. So I came home from that meeting up in Boston and walked in the door and told Basil, my late husband, that we needed to do this. We knew a whole lot about inherited retinal disease and we knew a lot about financial markets, and we needed to marry the two and figure out a way to make private finance support translational biomedical research.
I love that. I mean, I think oftentimes it turns out that our superpowers, if we have one, are this weird intersection of two unusual things that we have deep expertise in or knowledge about. So in your case, you combined experience with the challenge of funding, particularly for some rare disease conditions, with an understanding of financial markets. Found your calling here in a way. Is that right?
Yes. Although what happened, and then the calling got a lot louder because in 2018, my husband was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. And then, of course, in 2020, COVID hit. And what happened after COVID, as you all on this listening to this know well, is that it eviscerated biomedical treatments, cures, and clinical trials. Translational biomed that had, if it wasn't specifically targeted to COVID, was just gutted. Thousands of trials were canceled. Cancer research, for example, has been set back by years. And so we felt, and the foundation believed, and our team of pro bono lobbyists said, we need to expand our work on coming up with a new Federal Way program to back private investments in biomed for blindness with a much more sweeping treatments and cures financing across the spectrum of disease. And that's where our legislation, the Biobond legislation, H.R. 3437, stands. It is a $10 billion a year federal guarantee for translational research across the spectrum of disease and disability, not just blindness.
So this is super exciting, and I do want to get into much more detail on that in a second. But would you spend a minute talking about this gap that you identified? You said it was diplomatically put. What did you say, that the business model for venture capital doesn't cover translational research? Would you explain a little bit about why, you know, where the gap is? Because right now we have NIH funding and some nonprofit funding on early stage stuff, and we've got the venture community funding, you know, once things are at the company formation stage, I guess. But will we talk a little bit about what that continuum looks like?
It does. I mean, you did that really well, Chris. And there's the basic, preclinical, and then the three phases of clinical trials, 1, 2, 3, for safety and efficacy, and then for large-scale treatments. And you've got, as you said, NIH and philanthropies. The Foundation Fighting Blindness is one of the leading funders of basic, preclinical, and now a great deal of early-stage clinical trials in inherited retinal disease. But there's something that's widely known as the translational valley of death. Many projects that have terrific signs of success and even get through the company formation and IND clearance phases have a heck of a time getting funding for the increasingly expensive clinical trials proving safety and efficacy in diverse and larger patient bases. VC and big biopharma will step in towards the end of 2 and 3 in the clinical trial phases. There's money, a little bit more money now chasing yield coming in sooner. But basically, the business model between the basic research, which is not as well funded as it should be, and preclinical, but there's money there, and late stage biomed, where big money comes in, there is this gap in the middle. And the only way to get big money, pension funds, institutional investors, large scale investors with fiduciary duties who have to look out for other people, to get them into this business is to assure them that their money is safe. And that's why we decided we had to have a federal guarantee to bridge the valley of death.
That's a great segue into a deeper dive on biobonds. I don't want to forget about David. So David, will you please just share a little bit about your background and the Foundation for Fighting Blindness? Then we'll dive deep on biobonds concept.
Well, I appreciate that. But, you know, listening to Karen is always fascinating. So I don't have to be the center here. She's doing a great job. The Foundation Fighting Blindness started 50 years ago by Gordon Gunn and Ben Berman and a few other folks. And at that time, there was virtually nothing known about retinal diseases. And retinal diseases are retinitis pigmentosa, as Karen mentioned, but also macular degeneration, Stargardt's disease, Usher syndrome. There's a whole family of diseases that affect the retina and that are part of our family of diseases. And over the course of 50 years, we have funded $800 million of research. For the first 30, I'd say, it was basic research, just learning how the eye worked, finding genes, and making sure that the talented researchers entered the field. My son, Alan, is 24. He was diagnosed at 6 months of age with Leber's congenital amaurosis, which is a early form of retinitis pigmentosa. And so when I got involved, there really wasn't much more than a lot of hope. 20 years later, we have 44 clinical trials underway, and researchers around the world, clinical consortiums that are focused on these diseases, and really find to continue to make successes like we had with Luxturna, with restored vision in a form of Leber's congenital amaurosis. And so when Karen was at the meeting in Boston, and I wish she could have seen the energy in her face after she realized that she had an idea of how to solve this problem, it has been clear that what is stopping us is capital. So the idea of figuring out how to bring large amounts of capital into the field is critical. I will tell you that one of the reasons that valley of death is a problem for investors and venture biotech and pharma is that it is a long shot. But when you have a form of biobonds where someone making an investment could be making investments in potentially hundreds of clinical trials and potential solutions, it mitigates that risk, makes a lot of sense in that regard.
I was just going to say that one of the things that I loved when Karen suggested that you join, and I understood how successful the Foundation for Fighting Blindness has been, you know, what a history it has. In other words, it's not a new organization, and it has successfully raised really significant funds. Part of what is fascinating about that, I think, is it speaks to the fact that BioBonds and this idea is not competitive with what foundations are doing, but additive to. And speak on that for a second. I think that's great. And then we'll dive in more back to Karen with the mechanics here.
Well, sure. You know, foundations like ours, medical research foundations, we look at the portfolio of things that we invest in. We invest in more basic science to understand the mechanisms of action. We have to balance our portfolio and invest in infrastructure. And what I mean by infrastructure is making sure that we have clinical consortium so that we can conduct trials, making sure that we keep a database, a genetic database, so that we know where the patients are when there are trials. Those are things that attract the industry. And we also are investing in preclinical work. So when there's promising research and needs to be tested in animal models, we fund that also. Foundation decided about 3 years ago that we needed to make sure that we were moving the things into the clinic. And so since we were investing a great deal of money in institutions, we needed to make sure that when those were ready to go into the clinic, that we were facilitating that. So we raised $75 million and created our venture fund, has now all been deployed in 15 investments. So when we look at the portfolio, we have to balance how we put money out. And we have limited resources. We're an organization that puts out $30 million, something in that order. And it takes, I don't know, any trial probably takes $30 million in a phase one and maybe $102 to $200 million through the whole trial. So the idea of having BioBonds in the field, certainly as it relates to ophthalmologic research and retinal research, is the idea of taking it in that valley of death and onward, and so that we can focus our resources in sort of filling the pipeline, making sure that the understanding of the way the retina works and the potential treatments are coming up through the pipeline. So it's a really important vehicle, and it works not only for the eye, but it would be the same for any other part of the body that is being studied and researched.
Yeah, wonderful. So we've established that there is this valley of death in the research process. We've established that BioBonds are not competitive with the existing funding sources and actually provide a new solution. So Karen, what's a BioBond? Tell us a little bit about the concept.
Well, everybody, I think, understands a mortgage. And one of the things we're doing here is we're changing the biomed funding model from the traditional equity-based model. Everybody understands that once you've gone through philanthropy and NIH and you're looking for money, typically you get investors. And what they want in return for their money is ownership, and how much ownership and how much control they get can sometimes be very problematic, both in terms of cost to researchers as well as to control, because investors and biomed companies can be pretty fickle. If you don't produce results fast, no matter how promising the research is, they move on because they have short demanding investors and short fuses. So we wanted to change the model to a lower cost institutional funding debt model, because that is patient capital, a patient in terms of willing to wait, not just what it does for all of us who are all of us patients in one way or another at one time or another. So if you think about how you get a mortgage, this is really the model that my late husband Basil and I thought through and are using for BioBonds. You are a biomedical researcher and you have a great idea that's gone through enough phase one to get an IND. You're ready, preclinical, you're ready to go. You have a company, you go to the bank and you apply for a loan. And you don't have to prove to the bank that your research is any good, because of course the bank is not going to know that. You have to prove you have the ability to repay the loan. And that can come from resources from other projects that are providing you as a researcher with revenue. It can come from a university tech transfer office. It can come from a commitment from a foundation like the Foundation Fighting Blindness to guarantee your loan as a researcher. Doing that allows the foundation's funds to go farther. There are a lot of ways to demonstrate ability to repay. So you go and you say, I want this loan. The bank determines your ability to repay. Again, regardless of the quality of the science, the IND is the only seal of approval for eligibility, that and ability to repay. And the bank makes you the loan. The bank doesn't care beyond its due diligence obligations to ensure ability to risk, because it sells that loan into a pool of other loans being put together by a bond issuer. This is exactly how your mortgage works. You go to the bank looks at you, says, okay, you can, it looks like you can repay this loan. They advance you the money, and then they, what's called, upstream the loan to Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, or the federal government, which puts a stamp on it and creates a bond known as a mortgage-backed security. And as David said, these mortgage-backed securities have thousands of mortgages in them, which diversifies risk and reduces the obligation, the chances that the guarantee is even ever going to be called. It's a very risk-efficient portfolio diversification way of putting loans together, reducing risk, and then attracting more investors willing to buy more loans because their risk is reduced by virtue of diversification and the guarantee. And that's where the federal government comes in. H.R. 3437 authorizes the guarantee program, the ability of the U.S. Treasury market to put a stamp on these pools of biomedical loans and sell them out as bio bonds into the secondary market.
Fascinating. So the mortgage analogy is really helpful here. And I like the point, I love the point that the IND is the sort of seal of legitimacy, and whether the research is effective is not really the question for the bank to determine. Obviously, early stage research is riskier than home mortgages. So how do you think about the use of the federal guarantee, and how do you talk about that when you guys are advocating for this bill?
We talk a lot about the fact that there will be ability to repay. We don't care whether the science is risky. We know the science is risky, but we also know that while we don't always know how to tell which of the projects is, which scientific projects are going to be the ones that cure blindness or treat pancreatic cancer or reduce the pain and suffering associated with a disease or condition, we do know how to judge ability to repay. Now, these bonds are not going to be right for all researchers. They may have the IND, but they won't have the demonstrable ability to repay. Others will have equity investors and prefer that route. But this is additive for researchers with the resources, whether it's their own, that of a backup foundation, that of a group of philanthropists, even of their collateral, whether it be intellectual property, whatever it takes, that's how we do these bonds. So it's really not that different than mortgages, because mortgages actually are really risky. We had a giant global financial crisis because of that.
Yes.
And it was the failure to prove ability to repay in a demonstrable, disciplined way. And we're not going to make that mistake with biobonds.
Super helpful.
Keep in mind that the underlying reason to have biobonds is to cure disease. So the fact that there might be a government backing ultimately, which due to the portfolio theory hopefully would not be called on, but whenever you do a trial, you learn something, whether it's successful or not, and it helps move the field forward. So the underlying idea of why we have biobonds is not only to create efficiency in getting funds into the field, but from a government perspective, it's to cure people. So it's a noble and important government function.
Yeah,
but can I just add something to that, Chris? Sorry to take it. It is to cure people, and we know in climate risk that when you prove this bond funding model in an area of social or public welfare, you develop a huge private market. There's something called green bonds, and these are bonds structured very similarly to our bio bonds. It started in 2007 with a very teeny little guarantee from a World Bank agency to fund renewable energy. That is now a $600 billion a year global private sector market. You start with a federal guarantee, you develop the market, you prove it, as David said, proof of concept, and I think you're going to open up a huge private market for biomed, just as we've seen done for climate risk reduction. We're not making this up, it's been done before.
It's a great analogy. So you're saying this is kind of priming the pump and proving out the model, and then you think that the market can drive this to scale. Is that right?
Yes, that's exactly the goal.
Super, super helpful. Talk a little bit, if you would, about the iBonds pilot program. I think that's where you're aiming to start. Is that right?
No. What we did, the original legislation was iBonds, and it was different. We had hoped to get into the preclinical phase with NIH certifying the projects. They were very uncomfortable with doing that because it was too innovative. But also, again, we realized when COVID hit, we didn't have time. The original iBond idea was proof of concept, much smaller program, $250 million a year or $1 billion over 5 years. Now we are $10 billion over a year over 3 years for $30 billion because the need is too great. We can't move slowly. We can't do the pilot vision program. We know the need is too great. And we also have found that Capitol Hill is a lot more responsive to legislation that addresses the full range of biomedical issues, not just blindness.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Talk a little, if you would, about what that experience is like, you know, trying to drive congressional interest for the bill.
David, you're very much involved in that. Would you like to do that?
I'm happy to do that. How to put this? It's always an uphill climb. You need to create support on both sides of the table, so Democrats and Republicans. You need to create support in the White House. We've been working on this. I think Karen and Basil have been working on this for 6 years. Is that my right?
Yeah. That's about right.
6 years. So we've gone through administration. So then you've gone through different levels of control in Congress. And so you're always advocating to try to get support from people to move the bill. Then you have to have the bill introduced into the right subcommittee. And then you have to have the right support there. Then you have to go through appropriations. So we've done that probably in three different courses and have been derailed by a variety of things, including congressmen being voted out, COVID, priorities that come ahead of what we were trying to do. It's always difficult. We now have co-sponsors from both sides, and Dems and Republicans. We have support from the White House, but their attention is getting distracted from other things going on in the world. And so it is, whenever you're trying to get legislation put through, it is a constant grind. And no one I'd rather have working with me than Karen and Basil, may he rest in peace. They are relentless, because that's what it requires. It's a regular, almost daily follow-up to move things along. And our pro bono advisors and lobbyists, Akin Gump, have been, and others actually, have been tremendous in trying to move through this very important legislation. You know, you hear a lot on the news about discussions about legislation, and you think, well, somebody just proposed it and it started to run through the process. It takes years.
No, that's right. And that's why this podcast is so great, because it does get the word out. The more individuals talk to their members and say, look, this is new. I know it's a little complicated, but the United States is falling behind, and more importantly, patients are being left behind. Families are suffering, and people are dying prematurely. That the science is there, the money isn't. And nobody disputes that. It's just really trying to get bandwidth. That's the issue.
I mean, I guess that's the exciting thing for you guys, right? Is that you have a story here that it feels like can work for both sides of the aisle if you can get everyone to focus. And of course, I guess it requires boundless optimism to get to get our elected representatives to focus on something like this. Is that fair?
Yeah. Or endless delusion. I don't know which, but one or the other.
We're going to go with optimism.
What's great about the system is that, you know, we have 20 or 30,000 members all over the country. And when we introduce iBonds and now BioBonds, we reach out to them to try to go to their congresspeople to educate them and let them know about the program. It energizes them. It energizes our constituency. But it'd also be amazed if two or three constituents from a local congressional office get a meeting and sit down and talk about their support of this concept, how it stimulates the congressperson and staff. Really has garnered a great deal of energy on that side. It also is grassroots, constituent-based lobbying, as best I can put it. And it's really exciting, because I think all of our constituents will be part of this when it's successful.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure most members of Congress have somebody in their extended family or their friend group who has struggled with a rare disease or, you know, a rare cancer, or whatever it might be, that the relevance feels like it would be pretty easy to get people to understand.
I want to tell you one quick story about this lobbying. Is Congressman John Porter, the head of the Appropriations Committee, in charge of NIH for years, and he was my congressman in the suburb of Chicago. And this might have been 15 years ago. We called on him and had a meeting in his office. And in the middle of the meeting, he told us that his wife's father had RP. And he called his wife in the middle of the meeting and said, guess who's in my office? And proceeded to tell her about everything that we were telling him that we were doing. And from that moment on, we had his attention and his support whenever possible. So you never know, right? It's amazing that he didn't know about us, right? But didn't know what was going on. But once he found out, he was energized.
That's great. That's a fantastic story. That then I think brings us to the meat of the matter. So I guess who can be helpful to you? I suppose anybody who's listening potentially can be, but you know, how can people help? And I'm thinking, you know, our audience includes, you know, people that work in biotech. It includes people that are involved with advocacy, particularly in rare disease or who lead rare disease organizations. How can people be helpful? And how can, let's do how can they learn more first? And then let's talk about some of the things they might be able to do to help. So how can they learn more about the work you all are doing?
There's a website, as you might imagine, biobonds.org. I think that's a great place to start. It's got a white paper on the legislation. You can click on the bill. It's got some easier to read press articles like the New York Times article you mentioned, Chris. So there are a lot of resources on the BioBonds website. And there's a sign-up sheet for organizations. So if you are a philanthropic organization, a patients group, just a company, please take a look and consider putting your name on the We Support This. We've got a great list of organizations, including probably the leading patient advocacy group across the spectrum of diseases at Research America. And more names there are a really big help, particularly across different diseases, so we can show that it's not just blindness. And we do have cancer, autism, microbiome research, lots of different things, and more is really great. And then there's a way to call your congressman. There are links on there to send a letter. And of course, for those of you in advocacy, you can definitely reach out if you've got resources, if you'd like to join the pro bono lobbying team and get in on the strategy. We would welcome that.
You know, the applicability here is not limited in any way. I guess it can apply really to any biomedical research that's underway. But David, I think you were about to say something.
I was just going to say that anyone who's willing to reach out to their congressional folks and let them know about this legislation and get their support, we, Karen and I, and we can introduce you to other folks too, would be happy to either brief you or go with you. Because that's the crux of it. The more congressional people we can get excited about this, or people in the White House excited about this and focused about this, the better chance it has of passing.
I should say, to clarify, what question some might ask is, well, how does this relate to ARPA-H?
Welcome to BioRossi's Few and Far Between, conversations on the cutting edge of clinical research. I'm your host, Chris O'Brien. On today's podcast, we are very fortunate to have with us Karen Petru and David Brent. Our topic focuses on biobonds, an innovative financial vehicle designed to advance treatments for rare diseases and other disorders through clinical research. Karen Petru, the leader of this initiative, is the co-founder and managing partner for Federal Financial Analytics, Inc., which provides advisory services for legislative, regulatory, and public policy issues affecting financial services companies that do business in the U.S. and abroad. She's also the author of Engine of Inequality, The Fed, and the Future of Wealth in America. Additionally, Karen sits on the board of directors for the Foundation Fighting Blindness and the Fidelico Guide Dog Foundation. It is her journey as a visionary in patient advocacy and financial innovation that has led to the formation of the BioBond Initiative. Karen is joined by David Brent, the distinguished chairman of the board of directors for the Foundation Fighting Blindness, advocating research into prevention and treatment for the entire spectrum of retinal degenerative diseases. Together, they have helped to bring support and resources to patients in need and expanded their strategies into driving capital to critical clinical studies. We hope you join us for this fascinating discussion into the importance of translational biomedical research for venture capital companies, the creation of biobonds, and the need for continuing clinical research. This was really a fun one. I hope you enjoy this episode. Hello and welcome to Few and Far Between. Today, I'm really excited for a chat with Karen Petru and David Brent. We're going to be talking about biobonds, an exciting way to think about financing drug development as we go forward. And we're going to talk a little bit about the Foundation for Fighting Blindness. But first, let me welcome Karen and David. Karen, great to be speaking with you.
Thanks very much. It's a great pleasure.
And David, welcome.
Thank you very much. My pleasure to be here too.
Karen, let's start a little bit with you. You have a fascinating backstory. I found you through an article in the New York Times. Will you tell us a little bit about your personal journey and what brought you to focus on these alternative ways of developing financing solutions?
Sure. And I will be brief because it's been a long journey. But my professional background with my late husband had run a company which engages in global financial analytics and consulting for some of the world's central banks, biggest financial institutions. And so we think a lot about financial instruments and how financial markets work. And that's my day job. But in my real life, I had been losing my sight to a form of retinitis pigmentosa and therefore very much involved over many years with the Foundation Fighting Blindness, which David is now the distinguished chairman. Several years ago now, I was at an FFB board meeting and we were talking about this question of all of the great research that was coming on stream, which was really showing terrific promise for treating and even restoring vision for patients with inherited retinal diseases such as mine. But the venture capital wasn't there because, as one of the VCs at the meeting said, it just their business model did not support translational biomedical research. So I came home from that meeting up in Boston and walked in the door and told Basil, my late husband, that we needed to do this. We knew a whole lot about inherited retinal disease and we knew a lot about financial markets, and we needed to marry the two and figure out a way to make private finance support translational biomedical research.
I love that. I mean, I think oftentimes it turns out that our superpowers, if we have one, are this weird intersection of two unusual things that we have deep expertise in or knowledge about. So in your case, you combined experience with the challenge of funding, particularly for some rare disease conditions, with an understanding of financial markets. Found your calling here in a way. Is that right?
Yes. Although what happened, and then the calling got a lot louder because in 2018, my husband was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. And then, of course, in 2020, COVID hit. And what happened after COVID, as you all on this listening to this know well, is that it eviscerated biomedical treatments, cures, and clinical trials. Translational biomed that had, if it wasn't specifically targeted to COVID, was just gutted. Thousands of trials were canceled. Cancer research, for example, has been set back by years. And so we felt, and the foundation believed, and our team of pro bono lobbyists said, we need to expand our work on coming up with a new federal way program to back private investments in biomed for blindness with a much more sweeping treatments and cures financing across the spectrum of disease. And that's where our legislation, the Biobond legislation, H.R. 3437, stands. It is a $10 billion a year federal guarantee for translational research across the spectrum of disease and disability, not just blindness.
So this is super exciting, and I do want to get into much more detail on that in a second. But would you spend a minute talking about this gap that you identified? You said it was diplomatically put. What did you say, that the business model for venture capital doesn't cover translational research? Would you explain a little bit about why, you know, where the gap is? Because right now we have NIH funding and some nonprofit funding on early stage stuff, and we've got the venture community funding, you know, once things are at the company formation stage, I guess. But we talk a little bit about what that continuum looks like.
It does. I mean, you did that really well, Chris. And there's the basic preclinical and then the three phases of clinical trials, 1, 2, 3, for safety and efficacy, and then for large scale treatments. And you've got, as you said, NIH and philanthropies. The Foundation Fighting Blindness is one of the leading funders of basic preclinical and now a great deal of early stage clinical trials in inherited retinal disease. But there's something that's widely known as the translational valley of death. Many projects that have terrific signs of success and even get through the company formation and IND clearance phases have a heck of a time getting funding for the increasingly expensive clinical trials proving safety and efficacy in diverse and larger patient bases. VC and big biopharma will step in towards the end of 2 and 3 in the clinical trial phases. There's money, a little bit more money now chasing yield coming in sooner. But basically, the business model between the basic research, which is not as well funded as it should be, and preclinical, but there's money there, and late stage biomed, where big money comes in, there is this gap in the middle. And the only way to get big money, pension funds, institutional investors, large scale investors with fiduciary duties who have to look out for other people, to get them into this business is to assure them that their money is safe. And that's why we decided we had to have a federal guarantee to bridge the valley of death.
That's a great segue into a deeper dive on biobonds. I don't want to forget about David. So David, will you please just share a little bit about your background and the Foundation for Fighting Blindness? Then we'll dive deep on biobonds concept.
Well, I appreciate that. But, you know, listening to Karen is always fascinating. So I don't have to be the center here. She's doing a great job. The Foundation Fighting Blindness started 50 years ago by Gordon Gunn and Ben Berman and a few other folks. And at that time, there was virtually nothing known about retinal diseases. And retinal diseases are retinitis pigmentosa, as Karen mentioned, but also macular degeneration, Stargardt's disease, Usher syndrome. There's a whole family of diseases that affect the retina and that are part of our family of diseases. And over the course of 50 years, we have funded $800 million of research. For the first 30, I'd say, it was basic research, just learning how the eye worked, finding genes, and making sure that the talented researchers entered the field. My son, Alan, is 24. He was diagnosed at 6 months of age with Leber's congenital amaurosis, which is a early form of retinitis pigmentosa. And so when I got involved, there really wasn't much more than a lot of hope. 20 years later, we have 44 clinical trials underway, and researchers around the world, clinical consortiums that are focused on these diseases, and really find to continue to make successes like we had with Luxturna, which restored vision in a form of Leber's congenital amaurosis. And so when Karen was at the meeting in Boston, and I wish she could have seen the energy in her face after she realized that she had an idea of how to solve this problem, it has been clear that what is stopping us is capital. So the idea of figuring out how to bring large amounts of capital into the field is critical. I will tell you that one of the reasons that valley of death is a problem for investors and venture biotech and pharma is that it is a long shot. But when you have a form of biobonds where someone making an investment could be making investments in potentially hundreds of clinical trials and potential solutions, it mitigates that risk. Makes a lot of sense in that regard.
I was just going to say that one of the things that I loved when Karen suggested that you join, and I understood how successful the Foundation for Fighting Blindness has been, you know, what a history it has. In other words, it's not a new organization, and it has successfully raised really significant funds. Part of what is fascinating about that, I think, is it speaks to the fact that biobonds and this idea is not competitive with what foundations are doing, but additive to. And speak on that for a second. I think that's great. And then we'll dive in more back to Karen with the mechanics here.
Well, sure. You know, foundations like ours, medical research foundations, we look at the portfolio of things that we invest in. We invest in more basic science to understand the mechanisms of action. We have to balance our portfolio and invest in infrastructure. And what I mean by infrastructure is making sure that we have clinical consortiums so that we can conduct trials, making sure that we keep a database, a genetic database, so that we know where the patients are when there are trials. Those are things that attract industry. And we also are investing in preclinical work. So when there's promising research and needs to be tested in animal models, we fund that also. Foundation decided about 3 years ago that we needed to make sure that we were moving things into the clinic. And so since we were investing a great deal of money in institutions, we needed to make sure that when those were ready to go into the clinic, that we were facilitating that. So we raised $75 million and created our venture fund, has now all been deployed in 15 investments. So when we look at the portfolio, we have to balance how we put money out. And we have limited resources. We're an organization that puts out $30 million, something in that order. And it takes, I don't know, any trial probably takes $30 million in a phase one and maybe $100 to $200 million through the whole trial. So the idea of having biobonds in the field, certainly as it relates to ophthalmologic research and retinal research, is the idea of taking it in that valley of death and onward, and so that we can focus our resources in sort of filling the pipeline, making sure that the understanding of the way the retina works and the potential treatments are coming up through the pipeline. So it's a really important vehicle, and it works not only for the eye, but it would be the same for any other part of the body that is being studied and researched.
Yeah, wonderful. So we've established that there is this valley of death in the research process. We've established that biobonds are not competitive with the existing funding sources and actually provide a new solution. So Karen, what's a biobond? Tell us a little bit about the concept.
Well, everybody, I think, understands a mortgage. And one of the things we were doing here is we're changing the biomed funding model from the traditional equity-based model. Everybody understands that once you've gone through philanthropy and NIH and you're looking for money, typically you get investors, and what they want in return for their money is ownership, and how much ownership and how much control they get can sometimes be very problematic, both in terms of cost to researchers as well as to control, because investors and biomed companies can be pretty fickle. If you don't produce results fast, no matter how promising the research is, they move on because they have short demanding investors and short fuses. So we wanted to change the model to a lower cost institutional funding debt model, because that is patient capital, patient in terms of willing to wait, not just what it does for all of us who are all of us patients in one way or another at one time or another. So if you think about how you get a mortgage, this is really the model that my late husband Basil and I thought through and are using for biobonds. You are a biomedical researcher and you have a great idea that's gone through enough phase one to get an IND. You're ready, put preclinical, you're ready to go. You have a company, you go to the bank and you apply for a loan. And you don't have to prove to the bank that your research is any good, because of course the bank is not going to know that. You have to prove you have the ability to repay the loan. And that can come from resources from other projects that are providing you as a researcher with revenue. It can come from a university tech transfer office. It can come from a commitment from a foundation, like the Foundation Fighting Blindness, to guarantee your loan as a researcher. Doing that allows the foundation's funds to go farther. There are a lot of ways to demonstrate ability to repay. So you go and you say, I want this loan. The bank determines your ability to repay. Again, regardless of the quality of the science, the IND is the only seal of approval for eligibility, that and ability to repay. And the bank makes you the loan. The bank doesn't care beyond its due diligence obligations to ensure ability to risk, because it sells that loan into a pool of other loans being put together by a bond issuer. This is exactly how your mortgage works. You go to the bank looks at you, says, okay, it looks like you can repay this loan. They advance you the money, and then they, what's called, upstream the loan to Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, or the federal government, which puts a stamp on it and creates a bond known as a mortgage-backed security. And as David said, these mortgage-backed securities have thousands of mortgages in them, which diversifies risk and reduces the obligation, the chances that the guarantee is even ever going to be called. It's a very risk-efficient portfolio diversification way of putting loans together, reducing risk, and then attracting more investors willing to buy more loans because their risk is reduced by virtue of diversification and the guarantee. And that's where the federal government comes in. H.R. 3437 authorizes the guarantee program, the ability of the U.S. Treasury market to put a stamp on these pools of biomedical loans and sell them out as biobonds into the secondary market.
Fascinating. So the mortgage analogy is really helpful here. And I like the point, I love the point that the IND is the sort of seal of legitimacy, and whether the research is effective is not really the question for the bank to determine. Obviously, early stage research is riskier than home mortgages. So how do you think about the use of the federal guarantee, and how do you talk about that when you guys are advocating for this bill?
We talk a lot about the fact that there will be ability to repay. We don't care whether the science is risky. We know the science is risky, but we also know that while we don't always know how to tell which scientific projects are going to be the ones that cure blindness or treat pancreatic cancer or reduce the pain and suffering associated with a disease or condition, we do know how to judge ability to repay. Now, these bonds are not going to be right for all researchers. They may have the IND, but they won't have demonstrable ability to repay. Others will have equity investors and prefer that route. But this is additive for researchers with the resources, whether it's their own, that of a backup foundation, that of a group of philanthropists, even of their collateral, whether it be intellectual property, whatever it takes, that's how we do these bonds. So it's really not that different than mortgages, because mortgages actually are really risky. We had a giant global financial crisis because of that.
Yes.
And it was the failure to prove ability to repay in a demonstrable, disciplined way. And we're not going to make that mistake with biobonds.
Super helpful.
Keep in mind that the underlying reason to have biobonds is to cure disease. So the fact that there might be a government backing ultimately, which to the portfolio theory hopefully would not be called on. But whenever you do a trial, you learn something, whether it's successful or not, and it helps move the field forward. So the underlying idea of why we have biobonds is not only to create efficiency of getting funds into the field, but from a government perspective, it's to cure people. So it's a noble and important government function.
Yeah,
can I just add something to that, Chris? Sorry to take it. It is to cure people, and we know in climate risk that when you prove this bond funding model in an area of social or public welfare, you develop a huge private market. There's something called green bonds, and these are bonds structured very similarly to our bio bonds. It started in 2007 with a very teeny little guarantee from a World Bank agency to fund renewable energy. That is now a $600 billion a year global private sector market. You start with a federal guarantee, you develop the market, you prove it, as David said, proof of concept, and I think you're going to open up a huge private market for biomed, just as we've seen done for climate risk reduction. We're not making this up. It's been done before.
It's a great analogy. So you're saying this is kind of priming the pump and proving out the model, and then you think that the market can drive this to scale. Is that right?
Yes, that's exactly the goal.
Super, super helpful. Talk a little bit, if you would, about the iBonds pilot program. I think that's where you're aiming to start. Is that right?
No. What we did, the original legislation was iBonds, and it was different. We had hoped to get into the preclinical phase with NIH certifying the projects. They were very uncomfortable with doing that because it was too innovative. But also, again, we realized when COVID hit, we didn't have time. The original iBond idea was proof of concept, much smaller program, $250 million a year or $1 billion over 5 years. Now we are $10 billion over a year over 3 years for $30 billion because the need is too great. We can't move slowly. We can't do the pilot vision program. We know the need is too great. And we also have found that Capitol Hill is a lot more responsive to legislation that addresses the full range of biomedical issues, not just blindness.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Talk a little, if you would, about what that experience is like, you know, trying to drive congressional interest for the bill.
David, you're very much involved in that. Would you like to do that?
I'm happy to do that. How to put this? It's always an uphill climb. You need to create support on both sides of the table, so Democrats and Republicans. You need to create support in the White House. We've been working on this. I think Karen and Basil have been working on this for 6 years. Am I right?
Yeah. That's about right.
6 years. So we've gone through administration. So then you've gone through different levels of control in Congress. And so you're always advocating to try to get support from people to move the bill. Then you have to have the bill introduced into the right subcommittee. And then you have to have the right support there. Then you have to go through appropriations. So we've done that probably in three different courses and have been derailed by a variety of things, including congressmen being voted out, COVID priorities that come ahead of what we were trying to do. It's always difficult. We now have co-sponsors from both sides, and Dems and Republicans. We have support from the White House, but their attention is getting distracted from other things going on in the world. And so it is, whenever you're trying to get legislation put through, it is a constant grind. And no one I'd rather have working with me than Karen and Basil, may he rest in peace. They are relentless because that's what it requires. It's a regular, almost daily follow-up to move things along. And our pro bono advisors and lobbyists, Akin Gump, have been, and others actually, have been tremendous in trying to move through this very important legislation. You know, you hear a lot on the news about discussions about legislation, and you think, well, somebody just proposed it and it started to run through the process. It takes years.
No, that's right. And that's why this podcast is so great, because it does get the word out. The more individuals talk to their members and say, look, this is new. I know it's a little complicated, But the United States is falling behind, and more importantly, patients are being left behind. Families are suffering, and people are dying prematurely. That the science is there, the money isn't. And nobody disputes that. It's just really trying to get bandwidth. That's the issue.
I mean, I guess that's the exciting thing for you guys, right? Is that you have a story here that it feels like can work for both sides of the aisle if you can get everyone to focus. And of course, I guess it requires boundless optimism to get to get our elected representatives to focus on something like this. Is that fair?
Yes. Or endless delusion. I don't know which, but one or the other.
We're going to go with optimism.
What's great about the system is that, you know, we have 20 or 30,000 members all over the country. And when we introduce iBonds and now BioBonds, when we reach out to them to try to go to their congresspeople to educate them and let them know about the program, it energizes them. It energizes our constituency. But it also be amazed if two or three constituents from a local congressional office get a meeting and sit down and talk about their support of this concept, how it stimulates the congressperson and staff. Really has garnered a great deal of energy on that side. It also is grassroots, constituent-based lobbying, as best I can put it. And it's really exciting because I think all of our constituents will be part of this when it's successful.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure most members of Congress have somebody in their extended family or their friend group who has struggled with a rare disease or, you know, a rare cancer, whatever it might be, that the relevance feels like it would be pretty easy to get people to understand.
I want to tell you one quick story about this lobbying. Is Congressman John Porter, the head of the Appropriations Committee, in charge of NIH for years, and he was my congressman in the suburb of Chicago. And this might have been 15 years ago. We called on him and had a meeting in his office. And in the middle of the meeting, he told us that his wife's father had RP. And he called his wife in the middle of the meeting and said, "Guess who's in my office?" And proceeded to tell her about everything that we were telling him that we were doing. And from that moment on, we had his attention and his support whenever possible. So you never know, right? It's amazing that he didn't, you know about us, right? But didn't know what was going on. But once he found out, he was energized.
That's great. That's a fantastic story. That then I think brings us to the meat of the matter. So I guess the who can be helpful to you? I suppose anybody who's listening potentially can be, but you know, how can people help? And I'm thinking, you know, our audience includes, you know, people that work in biotech. It includes people that are involved with advocacy, particularly in rare disease or who lead rare disease organizations. How can people be helpful? And how can let's do how can they learn more first? And then let's talk about some of the things they might be able to do to help. So how can they learn more about the work you all are doing?
There's a website, as you might imagine, biobonds.org. I think that's a great place to start. It's got a white paper on the legislation. You can click on the bill. It's got some easier to read press articles like the New York Times article you mentioned, Chris. So there are a lot of resources on the BioBonds website. And there's a sign-up sheet for organizations. So if you are a philanthropic organization, a patients group, just any company, please take a look and consider putting your name on the We Support This. We've got a great list of organizations, including probably the leading patient advocacy group across the spectrum of diseases at Research America. And more names there are a really big help, particularly across different diseases, so we can show that it's not just blindness. And we do have cancer, autism, microbiome research, lots of different things, and more is really great. And then there's a way to call your congressman. There are links on there to send a letter. And of course, for those of you in advocacy, you can definitely reach out if you've got resources, if you'd like to join the pro bono lobbying team and get in on the strategy. We would welcome that.
You know, the applicability here is not limited in any way. I guess it can apply really to any biomedical research that's underway. But David, I think you were about to say something.
I was just going to say that anyone who's willing to reach out to their congressional folks and let them know about this legislation and get their support, we, Karen and I, and we can introduce you to other folks too, would be happy to either brief you or go with you. Because that's the crux of it. The more congressional people we can get excited about this, or people in the White House excited about this and focused about this, the better chance it has of passing.
I should say, to clarify, what question some might ask is, well, how does this relate to ARPA-H, the Biden administration's translational accelerator?
Yes.
And we have been in conversations with the White House. The two bills are very compatible. In fact, we've talked about combining them, and the White House is very open to doing that. They have been hit pretty hard by Dr. Lander's resignation. The ARPA-H bill is now, as one of our lobbyists said on our call earlier this week, the ARPA-H bill is on life support. So, you know, we'll help, but we in our biobond bill in some ways may have a better chance. Whatever it takes, we'll do what it takes to move translational research forward. And we want to work with the White House and anyone who can help us make that even a closer alliance. Again, we'd welcome that.
That's a great point, and it makes perfect sense. I think that's right. Whatever the most efficient way, a path forward is, or anything that can get done, honestly, in this legislative environment is probably the right answer. Okay, so if you are listening and you're involved in, if you're at a biotech company or a device company, and you're doing early stage stuff and you're interested in this, I think BioBond's website is also a way to get in touch, Karen, directly with you, I think, right? You
have directly with me, but it's a way to signal interest. I think there's a contact us. And I'll hear about it.
Right. And then for folks on the advocacy side, if you're an individual, if you're someone who is a lone voice in the wilderness, we know there are some people who are listening who are advocates for a family member. Reaching out to your congressperson could be very useful here. If you lead an organization, same path forward, I guess, to connect through biobonds.org. Any other points that either of you wants to make in closing or anything else you want to point people to in terms of connecting? David, we didn't give you a chance to plug the Foundation for Fighting Blindness. How can folks who are interested in that learn more?
I'll tell you two things. First of all, the Foundation Fighting Blindness, blindness.org is our website. Please go on it, see what we're doing. We are a leading edge, quite entrepreneurial nonprofit that is trying to move the field forward and cure people. As someone who knew children that had LCA and then got treated and really couldn't see and then could see again, there's nothing in the world like seeing a child gain function and have a more normal life and ride his bike and play ball. It is a driving mission for us. And in that regard, I will tell you that Karen and Basil, they're unbelievable people. And so when this happens, I think the world will owe a great deal to them and their good effort and brilliance.
I can't think of a better note to end on than that one. I think you summarized it perfectly. I think the work that you guys are doing is extremely exciting. I hope that this will help to get the word out on BioBonds, help you to move things forward a little bit. Thank you both for your time today.
Well, thank you for helping us do this. I really appreciate it very much, Chris.
Our pleasure.
Thanks, Chris.
Thank you for listening to the latest episode of Few and Far Between. If you enjoyed this podcast or have suggestions for future episodes, please get in touch with us. You can email us at fewandfarbetween@biorossi.com or contact us on our website at biorossi.com. You can also leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. They really help. See you next time.